Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle. Well, hello and welcome. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. I am excited to have Dr. Jocelyn Strand on. And we have been trying to do this episode for a while, and many life things have gotten in the way. So it's exciting that it's finally happening. And it's always exciting to have Jocelyn on either the podcast, or she was not only the person who helped me start my food sensitivity group here in Duluth in 2010, but she also was a speaker for us usually a couple times a year. So you get to benefit from all of that now too, everywhere, wherever you are. And I totally miss my food group and my food groupies and getting together and sharing that knowledge amongst each other. One positive to doing the podcast is reaching those who couldn't travel quite so far and well beyond worldwide. It's kind of crazy. We're going to do something different today. So this is going to be an Ask the Doctor episode, something that we actually are planning on doing more of in the future. This time, I have various questions that have come up over time that I'm asking Jocelyn, and then one that was submitted by a listener. Thank you, Jessica M., for visiting me at one of the events and submitting a question that's going to be answered for you today. Ta-da! As I said, Jocelyn was on the podcast before, way back in episode 2, where she talks about her philosophy and what it means to be a naturopath. So check that out if you like what you hear and want to find out more. For me personally, Jocelyn has been a huge support to me in my health journey, and in a few cases, keeping me from being cut into and having parts of my body burned off. See podcast episode 18 to hear about one of those instances. I really want everybody to have an opportunity to know if there are options around their health, which is a huge inspiration for me doing this podcast. Not too long ago, she has moved into a new location where she has her practice as well as a storefront that is located on at 732 East Superior Street. Just to give you a point of reference, if you happen to know where the restaurant Va Bene is, she's in that same building about a door or two to the right. When we're done with our conversation, I will share more information about how to reach Jocelyn in person and over the web, as well as how to submit a question for the next Ask a Doctor episode, and a fun, exciting thing that's happening for us here on the podcast. If you're from Duluth and you know the area, you know that her office is right off of Lake Superior, so you get a few extra sound treats because we did this interview at her space, so you get to hear our whistle of our sightseeing train, which is kind of fun. And if you're wearing headphones, I'm not sure if you can hear it other ways, but if you're wearing headphones, you might also be able to hear the sound of the waves outside the window, which I think is pretty cool. All right, come with me for a little space and time travel back to Jocelyn's office. So we are here in, in Jocelyn's studio.
It is my studio.
It's your studio. Well, it's beautiful. She's got this amazing lake view. So come visit her in her office because it's the best view you're going to get from a care facility in Duluth.
No kidding.
Just saying. All right, so let's dive into some questions. First one, nutritional yeast. So talk about nutritional yeast in its cheesy flavors.
Okay.
But my question is...
are you trying to sell nutritional yeast?
Yeah, that's my gig now. I'm selling nutritional yeast. All my podcasts would be about nutritional yeast right now. The question that keeps coming up for people is, it has yeast in the title. So does that make it... Like, how does it differ from a typical yeast if it does? And then what if somebody has yeast overgrowth or candida, can they have nutritional yeast?
It really depends on the person. Nutritional yeast is used extensively for vegetarian and vegan people as a recommended source of vitamin B6 and B12 because those are largely animal-based. Well, you can only get B12 from animal sources other than that. And maybe some in fermented foods. So, and that's because of the yeast making it, right? So the B12. And so it can be That's why it's called nutritional yeast, because it's high in nutrients. But it is a yeast, and it's Saccharomyces, which is also used to ferment. Well, it's used to bake bread, and it's used to ferment beer, and it's used to create kombucha. Saccharomyces is a yeast that's, well, it can have a positive effect for some people, and it can have a negative effect for some people. And so it really depends on a patient's history. So if a person has a sensitivity in general to, I had one patient call it all things dank. So it's like fungally, moldy, yeasty things, right? Huh. So especially someone, there can be a genetic predisposition where someone has a mold exposure and or a yeast overgrowth, and then yeast or mold exposures following that will create an inflammatory issue in the body, or it can create a situation where people's immune system bottoms out, basically, where they are not as capable of creating an immune response. So they will like flatline, basically. And those sorts of people, when they have a mold exposure, they'll start to get every cold and flu that goes around. They'll have opportunistic organisms start to resurface. They will not tolerate also kombucha, right, or other fermented foods. They should also avoid yeast. And then yeast derivatives like MSG and yeast in bouillon cubes. And so the yeast does have a very strong flavor, right? So it's used as a flavoring agent in a lot of chips and that sort of that sort of thing. So you have to, people like that need to watch out for it. It can start with a mold exposure, or it can start with excessive antibiotic use. So people will end up with a really dramatic yeast overgrowth on their body. It can be intestinal, skin, vaginal, ear canals. They'll get this yeast overgrowth in their entire body, and then it will trigger an immune response that's either, like I already said, the inflammatory or immune suppression, or both at the same time. So it just really depends. Some people, it's the same reason why 100 people in a sick building, only a small percent, like 7 of them will get sick, or 10 of them will get sick from the mold exposure, because there's this other genetic piece. So you, in illness in general, you need the genetic predisposition, and then you need the trigger. And the trigger is in the environment. And sometimes nutritional yeast can be a trigger for people.
Okay.
So it can create illness. But for other people, it's a source of nutrients. So it just really depends on the person.
Okay. So if they start noticing they're using nutritional yeast, they're noticing they're getting sick, not feeling well,
yeah, mostly
then
they'll notice it right away.
Okay.
Right? I would say most people would notice it in pretty short order. The easiest way to do it is if you're consuming nutritional yeast and you're having gastrointestinal symptoms or skin conditions, or you're not getting well easily, or you're getting sick often, then you take out the nutritional yeast. Take out all yeast, and that includes so bread and nutritional yeast and all fermented things like wine and beer and vinegar. And I never understood that. I mean, I didn't understand that when I first started practicing. Like, why would someone have to avoid vinegar because they had a yeast overgrowth, when it's a different kind of yeast and it's actually beneficial? Saccharomyces is beneficial for the gastrointestinal tract for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't really get that. Like, it didn't make any sense intuitively to me until I'd done testing with patients and seen this outcome where people either, so Candida albicans can cause the same thing, which is a yeast overgrowth, a natural yeast or a commensal yeast that lives on our body. Normally, we all have Candida, but if it gets out of balance, then it creates symptoms. So the same thing can happen. If we get sensitive to yeast and fungal things, we can get a kind of across the board. And one way it might show up is like toenail fungus or finger fungus or skin fungus on their skin, ringworm and or jock itch. Those sorts of things all can be a result of immune suppression from dank things. So, and nutritional yeast probably won't cause those things, but it's people who have a sort of a fungally issues, like if they're getting recurrent yeast infections, if they're getting fungal infections on their skin, their toenails, their scalp, then those people probably would be better off not eating yeast.
Okay. Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Interesting. Who knew there was so much to know? That's why I ask you these things. I get a complete answer.
I hope so. There's always more to learn, too.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah.
All right, next question. So Jessica, question from the audience, wants to know, how can I eat vegan and lose weight?
Okay. So it's another complex question. So I think the tendency to, when people go vegan, vegan can be a very healthy diet. Vegan can be an unhealthy diet. So it depends on where you take it, right? So you can eat Twinkies and be vegan. And you can eat, you know, Wonder Bread and peanut butter. And that's all. You could eat just that and call yourself a vegan. Or you can eat a combination of whole foods. And, you know, so there's this whole spectrum of how to eat and eat a healthy diet. And there are lots of different paradigms for food. Vegan and vegetarian or plant-based is one. But I would say most healthy diets are what everybody's kind of agreeing on across the board these days is that plant-based really is truly the healthiest way to eat. And then it depends on the paradigm that you're asking about, whether it also includes fruit or whether it also includes meat, right, in the diet. So that would be, we're looking at vegan versus vegetarian versus paleo versus keto, and there's all these different ideas. But really what we're understanding more and more is that getting the vegetables and fruit in, not fruit for everybody, but most diet paradigms agree that fruit is a healthy source of carbohydrates and source of nutrients. So I tend to, in my practice, recommend for everybody that it's a plant-based diet where they're eating tons of vegetables, tons of fruit, and then also eating nuts and seeds. And if they're not vegan, then I recommend a little bit of meat. And if they are vegan, then we are looking at trying to get those proteins. And what becomes complicated is making sure that you're getting enough in the way of nutrients like B12. And making sure that you're getting all of the required amino acids, the essential amino acids in the diet. So vegan can be healthy, but you have to be extra careful to, over time, you can become nutrient deficient. And that can affect things like our neurotransmitter levels, which will directly affect our ability to lose weight and gain weight. And it also, and that's craving. So an example of that would be, like, if we don't get enough tyrosine, which is primarily an animal product, then we can't produce dopamine, and low dopamine will cause food cravings, right? It will cause actually addiction issues of all sorts, right? If you don't have enough tryptophan, which is also primarily a meat-based amino acid, then it's difficult to produce serotonin and melatonin, which helps us, you know, it's our feel-good neurotransmitter. So it's the one that we typically think of as low levels of that can be causative for depression, for migraines, for fibromyalgia, for sleeplessness or difficulty with sleep. So, and the source of nutrients for that would be spirulina is a really great source. You know, you just have to up it a notch. So you can't be taking just a little spirulina every now and again. It would become like a staple of your diet. Spirulina, chlorella, those two things and you want cracked cell wall chlorella so that you have access to the insides of the chlorella, the protein inside of the cell. And then making sure that you're getting adequate sources of balanced protein. And so in terms of weight loss, what needs to be avoided is usually a diet that's heavy in grain is going to be more difficult to lose weight. So if there's a lot of wheat or rice, I would move away from that more towards quinoa, which is a higher protein grain, higher nutrients in general, and lower carbohydrate grain, and then a little bit of wild rice. But I think the problem is that we think 2 cups or 3 cups of wild rice for dinner, right? And then you have 100 grams of carbs on your plate.
Wow.
So if you go with, you know, smaller servings of that and really fill your plate with the fruits and vegetables. The other thing that can really help with satiety and also with weight loss would be like the starchier root vegetables and winter squash. So sweet potatoes, beets and carrots and rutabaga and those turnips, those things that will carry a more sort of satisfying or satiating carb load that will help us feel full at the end of a meal. If you're taking grain out, which is one of the best ways, at least in my clinical practice, to reduce inflammation and to lose weight, then moving towards those root vegetables can really help people with compliance with that because they feeling like they've eaten enough in a meal. If you have a whole sweet potato and you load it up with coconut oil and maybe some cinnamon and salt, and you can eat the whole thing and have a... Because it's so full of fiber and the glycemic index is relatively low, even though it's a sweet potato, it's got a nice glycemic index, then you will feel like you've had, you know, a nice big, full, warm, full belly and an extended carb release. And you won't get the same blood sugar spike that you would from a cup of rice.
Right, okay.
And that, so we're looking at stabilizing blood sugar. The other thing you can do with any diet, not just vegan, is to eat fructose in the form of a fruit sugar every hour to hour and a half. No, hour and a half to 2 hours, excuse me. So 90 to 120 minutes, a date, or a half an apple, or a full apple, it doesn't matter. But if people shy away from too much fruit, or if they're concerned about bringing that much fruit, and then I have them do it, well, just do a half an apple instead of a whole apple. Mm-hmm. But that bump, and the research is like 10 grams of sugar actually stabilizes blood sugar. But the other thing that does is it takes the load off of your adrenals, which help us manage stress. Cortisol comes up if our blood sugar drops. So this will keep your cortisol low. And then if your cortisol is lower, it's easier to keep your insulin resistance will be better. So it'll be lower. And your blood sugar regulation will be better. So basically you're regulating your blood sugar with diet instead of having to have your body do it with hormones. Mm-hmm. And that cortisol, if you're releasing it because your blood sugar is fluctuating, which happens a lot more on a vegan diet than if you can go... Like a paleo diet or keto diet allows people to, you know, they can do really high fat, and they can do higher protein and do that. And then you can go an extended amount of time and you won't see the cortisol fluctuations. You won't see the blood sugar fluctuations. But if you're eating a vegan diet and you have more carbohydrate because of that, then you'll see more blood sugar fluctuations. So the way that you manage that is by having snacking, and you can do that with, you know, dried apricots or dates or trail mix, a little bit of nut and fruit mix together. It always has to have some good carb in it, and that, so fruit is the easiest, but you can also do like baby carrots or something, like a half a sweet potato, and just be kind of snacking through the whole day, and that way you would notice a stabilization of blood sugar, and then your cortisol can drop, and then you become more insulin sensitive, basically, and you'll be able to store sugars and fats the way they need to be stored more readily. It's oversimplification, but probably good enough for now.
It's a good start, yeah. and you mentioned quinoa. Is quinoa as a complete protein, right?
Not on its own.
No, okay. What do you add to it? Isn't there...
Bean legumes would make it a complete protein.
Okay. And would you consider that in the grain family of take that out?
I would say...
really cutting the grains.
If you have very stubborn... Or if it's very difficult to lose weight, then I would try taking it out. But most people do not have to take it out to lose weight. But I would say, unfortunately, like portion control with any grain. But if you're going to do a grain, then I would say quinoa is the one that's got the best profile in terms of carb load, protein, and nutrients. It's very high in nutrients as well. So iron and calcium and some of the other nutrients are really high in quinoa.
Cool. All right. Next item up for bid. So, hypoglycemia, since we're talking about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's dive into talking about that and blood sugar a little bit. And the reason that that comes up for me is just some reading that I've done, as well as some other things that I've heard where there's concern from one particular physician that I was reading, that basically saying that even when people are diagnosed with diabetes, they're not looking at the hypoglycemia.
Okay.
And that being sort of underdiagnosed or under awareness for people to be able to handle that. So if you can describe maybe like what is a person looking for to determine if they have hypoglycemia, be it in tests or what they're feeling.
Their experience of it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So hypoglycemia is a precursor to diabetes, right? And basically both of them are blood sugar dysregulation. So your blood sugar is hypoglycemia, your blood sugar is too low. Hyperglycemia is diabetes or elevated blood sugar, right? And so long before someone becomes diabetic, they will have fluctuations in blood sugar. So that typically you would see the consumption of carbohydrates are the only... Carbs are the only thing that raise our blood sugar. So I think that's interesting and important to note, right? Because then if you're having blood sugar fluctuations, if you cut your carb load down, then you will modify that. Period. There's no other way around it, right? So the only thing that will ever create a spike is a carbohydrate, which is where that's largely what the ketogenic diet and the paleo diet diets are based on, mm-hmm. is that if you cut your carb load down in some, like keto is below 20 grams of carbohydrates in a day, which is extremely low. And I think most paleo paradigm, there's paleo and then there's 100 different paleo paradigms.
Right.
So, but I think most of them are below 50 grams of carb, if you're counting carbs, that you need to keep it below 50. And I'm not saying that diet is necessary for treating or modifying, you know, to do that in order to, you don't have to do those diets in order to stabilize blood sugar. But they can be helpful, very, very helpful in stabilizing blood sugar or just cutting carb load down or paying attention to your carbs. It is directly related to the last question that we just talked about. There's no question. So I mean, we kind of touched on it already, right? Mm-hmm. Is that hypoglycemia, most often it's a result of having eaten sugar that creates a spike in the insulin response. So it's a whole series or a cascade of events that happens. You eat something high in sugar, whether it's, you know, high fructose corn syrup, or whether it's a bowl of rice, or whether it's potatoes, you know, something very starchy. If you eat it too much of it, it will create a spike. And then your body responds by releasing insulin, and that takes that insulin tells the body to take the sugar and put it inside the cell. And if you're hammering your body over and over with that, then eventually it gets to the point where it starts to ignore that signaling, and that's called insulin resistance. But in the meantime, as your body's trying to, at first, when you hammer it, it takes it in, it takes the blood sugar out of the, you release a ton of insulin, it takes the sugar out of the bloodstream, and then all of a sudden we're hypoglycemic, we don't have enough sugar, mm-hmm. right? Which is why you see this happen with high glycemic index foods or food. What that means, high glycemic index, is that when you eat it, you get a blood sugar spike. If it's a low glycemic index, you get a small spike. So a high carbohydrate, high glycemic index food will be more likely to create hypoglycemia because your body has this dramatic response to a big load of sugar, big load of insulin, and then all of a sudden your sugar drops, your blood sugar drops. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So what you can do is not eat such a big load of sugar, right? So that's really basic. I mean, this is like common sense. If you are having hypoglycemic symptoms on a regular basis, you need to reduce your refined carbohydrate load. And then we'd be looking at a similar therapeutic to what we just talked about with the vegan diet, which is eating consistently through the day. And the reason we talked about the vegan diet is because when you're vegan, your proteins automatically include carbohydrates. So you can't get away from a carbohydrate load with every meal unless you're only doing spirulina and chlorella for protein. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it can be done, but it takes a lot of planning. And I would send someone probably to a specialized nutritionist to do vegan, like vegan bodybuilding or something like that, right? But with hypoglycemia, you can either like go paleo, quote paleo, or primal or caveman. And I think that's typically what I recommend is a modified paleo diet, where again, where we're really, really focusing on lots of fruits and vegetables, bringing in a little bit of meat and nuts and seeds, but primarily we're getting most of our nutrients from plants, from a plant-based diet. And then you asked me too about symptoms, right, of what it might look like.
Mm-hmm.
So typically what you might expect is that after you eat, within a half hour to an hour, you might start to feel, initially, this is early on, right, that you might start to feel, what people will notice is that they're shaky. They might get shaky between meals, or they get hangry, right?
Mm-hmm.
that hangry, where if I've gone too long without a meal, I get really irritable, fatigued, dizziness, sweat, like hot flashes or sweaty palms. All of those things can be a result of blood sugar dropping. And it can be anxiety, it can be nausea. And so if it's happening after you haven't eaten for an extended amount of time, then that's a hypoglycemic response. So really, people should not have to eat every hour and a half if you have that experience where after an hour and a half or 2 hours, you start to get shaky. Or if you miss a meal even,
mm-hmm.
and you get shaky, then it means that you probably have too much in the way of complex carbohydrates, or you're far enough along sort of in that journey of blood sugar dysregulation that you, even if you alter your diet a little bit, sometimes it takes a pretty significant alteration in diet mm-hmm. choices in order to modify your hypoglycemic response. Once you've gotten to a certain point, you might have to intervene with supplementation or be really, really strict with dietary considerations in order to correct
the blood sugar back on a normal track.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I guess I'm thinking of people that I know, partially because I look at people's food blogs.
Yeah.
Is the whole before they feel like the sugar's dropping I'm seeing sometimes more complex carbs, but usually it's not in the form of vegetables. Usually it's in the form of some sort of grain or
bread or cookies,
right,
or crackers or pasta or something.
Granola bars,
okay.
or those
yep.
kinds of things, and then having that dip.
Yep.
So bringing that back to the vegetables instead and not having the
other vegetables
stuff.
And fruit. Fruit's
right.
fine too, right? So if people are hypoglycemic, until they get to a place where their blood sugar is stabilized, I do often have them, or always pretty much have them, do snacking on fruit through the whole day again.
Okay.
The other thing that you can do is, and this is from Kevin Connors, who was a chiropractor that practiced up here for a time,
mm-hmm.
And I was, when he first started talking about it, I was like, that's interesting. And but then I saw the therapeutic effect in my own patients. I started using it as well, which is you can take a quart mason jar and squeeze a lemon into it and put 2 tablespoons of maple syrup in it.
Okay.
And some Himalayan salt. And you've basically made yourself like a natural Gatorade.
Oh,
does that make
sense? So electrolytes.
Electrolytes, exactly. Electrolytes and then a little bit of sugar. And what you're looking for is the same thing, a little sugar bump through the whole day of a healthy, sort of a healthier sugar. And you would sip on that through the whole day. And if you start to feel like hypoglycemic, then you take a sip of that.
Interesting.
And then you're getting nutrients as well as supporting that blood sugar piece. And it makes a huge difference for people. Another way, actually, I think this is an amazing thing that I've seen in my practice, is that hypoglycemia can show up is that people will wake up around 2 or 3 in the morning. So they eat their dinner, especially if it's a dinner that's like pasta or carb heavy, refined carbohydrate heavy, then they eat their dinner and then go to bed and they get the blood sugar drop around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Our body, you know, goes into panic mode because our brain is going to starve without the blood sugar, which is what feeds the cells in our brain, right? So your glucose drops, your body says, we can't have this, right? So then we release cortisol, which is our chronic stress hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And its purpose is to get us up and going. So then we wake up 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, either hungry or we cannot get back to sleep because our cortisol is so high that we can't go back into sleeping mode. Cortisol and melatonin are in opposition to each other. So then what I will have people do is eat a bedtime snack that's fat and protein heavy, like 2 eggs or apples and peanut butter. So it's a more complex carbohydrate. And that carbs create a blood sugar spike, and fat and protein stabilize blood sugar. So they will slow that blood sugar spike. So if you combine carbohydrates and fat together, then you will slow the carbohydrate spike. Fiber also. So the fiber that's in an apple slows, even though there's sugar in an apple, that sugar is bound to fiber. And so it's like a slow release. And if there's, as opposed to apple juice or something
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that you combine that, if you want to slow the glycemic response of a meal, if you're going to eat something high carbohydrate, combining a healthy fat with it or fiber and protein with it.
Okay. And just to toss some examples out there, healthy fats being avocado,
yep.
nuts.
So polyunsaturated would be like omega-6s from olive oil, coconut oil, fish oils, so salmon, or, you know, an omega-3 supplement, sardines, anchovies.
Okay.
And then, I mean, it depends on your paradigm, right? And that's the other one that we're going to get into is which fats do you do when? Because some, if you do elevated, you know, lots of saturated fats, then you need to be careful if you're doing a lot of carbohydrates and fats together, that it will create inflammation, systemic inflammation in the body if you're combining the two of them. So you could even do, I would say, nuts as a bedtime snack, or a couple of eggs as a bedtime snack. You could do, I suppose you could do a can of sardines, with I don't know, some paleo crackers or something like that. But there's something like that will really help. I think more simpler for most people would be like some trail mix with a little bit of fruit in it. But I wouldn't do a lot of dried fruit at bedtime, right? Mm-hmm. Because you'll get that spike and drop, right? During the day, if you're eating every hour and a half to 2 hours, it's not as big a deal if you get a little bit of a fluctuation. But evening, when you're trying to sleep through the night, you want more of that fat, fiber, protein load and avoid the carbohydrate load at bedtime. Or even at dinner, you could do a low-carb dinner. That can really help people sleep more easily.
Okay. And one other question that pops up in this kind of discussion is, so if somebody is hypoglycemic, they've hit the low and they're like, okay, I need to eat something. What's the best thing to do kind of to bring it up?
In the moment.
In the moment, exactly.
To relieve their symptoms.
To bring it up safely,
yeah.
With a good quality food instead of, you know, some of the recommendations are, you know, soda and some of the other things.
Yeah, a piece of fruit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I would just always reach for a piece of fruit, whatever's easiest for fruit and or that beverage that's a little bit sweetened with maple syrup or raw honey, either one.
Okay.
But fructose is the one that has the most study behind it, and it's like, I think it's either 8 or 9 grams of sugar is all that you need to stabilize blood sugar. You don't need to have the pop.
Right.
In order to stabilize blood sugar, you can do a much smaller, and if you still don't feel good, then you eat more fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're looking at a commitment to getting those carbohydrates that load down over the long haul in order to be able to stabilize blood sugar.
More consistent time.
Yep.
Okay. And should we dive in then to, since we're discussing fats, saturated fat, and is saturated fat going to kill us?
So saturated fats, whether they're healthy or inflammatory for someone, is really based on the other things that they're eating as well. Saturated fat would be, so an egg yolk has saturated fat, and saturated fats primarily, not always, but primarily come from animal fats. So egg yolk, pork fat, or, you know, like on a pork chop, if you, the strip of fat, like that's all saturated fat. Ground beef, the 15% or whatever that's fat, is going to be, not all of it's saturated fat, but some of it's saturated fat, or it's higher in saturated fat. And interestingly, olive oil has some saturated fat. It's not always a straight one thing or the other, right?
Okay.
So like a cow who grazes on grassland is going to have some omega-3s in there. It's not going to all be saturated fats. It's going to have some good fats in it as well. So the fat, and a cow that's eating a ton of corn is going to have more omega-6s in it, right? It's going to have some of the corn oil basically in its body too. So it really depends on if you're eating animal fat, what the animal is eating, and then, you know, even olives will have a mixture of, primarily it's a polyunsaturated fatty acid, but it also has saturated fat in it as well. But saturated fats in general, they got a really bad rap over the last, starting in the 70s, for the assumption that it increased cholesterol. So egg yolks, because they have cholesterol, they must increase cholesterol, which is not necessarily true. It is true for some people, but it's not necessarily true. And saturated fats got demonized in the late 70s and 80s. And if you are combining saturated fats with a high carbohydrate load and an inflammatory diet, and that is equated with a high carbohydrate load. So inflammatory diet is a high carb, meaning like lots of grains, lots of sugar, lots of refined carbohydrates, is a very inflammatory diet in a number of ways, right? So it can, we'll just call it that for now, because that's another discussion, right? why are they inflammatory? We can talk about that later. When your inflammation is high, that causes damage to the linings, the blood vessels. It causes damage to your joint space. It causes, inflammation right now is considered the cause of aging tissue. So it's why we age, inflammation. I mean, and that's if you buy a completely physiological and you don't include the mental, emotional, spiritual, right?
Right.
So what we're talking about here is just plain diet and how it affects our body, or inflammation, how it affects our body, straight up the physical aspect of it. So removing the other aspects. What I would say is that if you have inflammation, basically, whatever the cause of the inflammation is, then we get damage to the lining of the blood vessels, and that causes inflammation in the lining of the blood vessels, will result in deposition of fats as a way to, it's an attempt to repair, basically, on our body's part. So that's cholesterol deposition, or the fatty acid deposition in the lining of the blood vessels. So that's why when you have these inflammatory fats, and that's what's floating around your bloodstream, and you have inflammation, then you end up with this combination that causes cardiovascular disease, that increases. Also, those saturated fats are precursors for arachidonic acid and other inflammatory mediators in the body that increase inflammation. And so if that's what we have available in our bloodstream and we're inflamed, then we end up going down this pathway of that sort of generates fire in our body. Mm-hmm. So the combination of sugar and fat together, saturated fat, is a difficult one. If people are not eating high carb load, if their inflammation is low and they're not eating lots of refined carbohydrates, then saturated fats don't have the same effect in the body, because there's no need for them to be, our inflammatory process is initiated and fed by the saturated fats. So that you're looking at paleo and or keto diets, where if you don't have the spike and fall in blood sugar that you get with elevated carb load, then the saturated fats don't cause the same problems.
Okay. That's interesting, because I was reading a book about diabetes, and the doctor who was talking about that, he only spoke about coconut oil.
Oh.
But he spoke about it in that way, of the whole, if you're eating low carb, your body can process coconut oil, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't become a bad thing. But he didn't talk about the other oils. So that was interesting.
Oh, that is weird.
Yeah.
Because I think of coconut oil as much less of a culprit to inflammatory processes than saturated fats from animal. Oh, dairy is another huge source of saturated fat. That's one I left out, right? So not just meat, but dairy, eggs, egg yolks, you know, and like I said, not this is not to demonize one food group. It's just that when you have to pay attention to the food combining, I guess, is kind of what it comes back to, is what is your choice for paradigm, and how do you stick with it in a way that creates a healthy environment for your body?
Right. And I think we'll have to talk about that more, because I think that's such a big thing for people, and to help them understand, to help us figure out what we're choosing and why, in a sense, the American diet is so bad for us, mm-hmm. and to understand why we might want to choose a diet paradigm.
Yeah, and it's confusing. I mean, because mm-hmm. all of us have, anybody interested in health has read, there's so many diet paradigms,
yes.
and it just gets confusing. Like, oh, and now I'm supposed to take out meat in addition to, like, now it's vegan is healthy, like Forks Over Knives, that movie,
mm-hmm.
which I think all of that information is great, and then we get to decide what feels right and works right for us, because every person's an individual, but it just gets so confusing if you start with, like, what was it for me in medical school? It was, why don't you try taking out gluten? That's where it started with me. Well, how about if we try a detox where we take out all gluten-containing grains, and then we also will remove dairy and eggs and soy and corn,
uh-huh.
right? And so then I'm like, okay, well, that's an anti-inflammatory diet to me back then.
Right.
Now, an anti-inflammatory diet to me is all grain, all dairy, all sugar.
Uh-huh.
That's what I take out, right? So it's just, it shifts over time what your perceptions are. And then also in this world of full of information, we have 30 different diet paradigms to choose from. Some are therapeutic diets, some are weight loss diets, some are blood sugar stabilizing diets, some are seizure stabilizing. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
there's a whole ton of reasons why to do a certain diet. And really, ultimately, I think it comes down to, ideally, you pick your paradigm, like you said, because if you're crossing paradigms, you're going to get sort of the worst of all of them.
Right.
Well, all of them is how it ends up.
Right.
Instead of the best of all of them, you know, I think the problem becomes if someone's eating paleo or keto and they're fine and they're feeling pretty good, and then they fall off the wagon and have ice cream and a donut.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got all these saturated fats in the body and an inflammation spike, right? So, and once in a while is different from once a week or eating, you know, not really being able to do it halfway. That results in problematic symptoms for people. Inflammation, right. Basically. Blood sugar dysregulation, all of that stuff. The chronic stuff that we're talking about.
Well, and it is. It's a big conversation, and it's sort of the what do you want your health to look like, and then what diet fits that
mm-hmm.
best.
And your moral beliefs, and your,
right.
How do you feel about the planet and the consumption of meat, and how do you, I mean, there's so many things, factors that go into a decision about food.
And what can you stick to?
Exactly. Compliance is huge. It's
right.
huge, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you want to be a vegan, for all the wonderful reasons there are to be vegans, but you can't stick to it because you can only do that by eating burritos and Twinkies, well, then maybe we need to
right.
look at another option.
Right. Yep, and then where do you cross the line into what's healthy for me versus, if diet can be as highly personal decision to me as a spiritual path,
mm-hmm.
right? So people can get really dogmatic and feel very, very strongly about diet stuff, and I tend to think people know based on how we feel, you know, and do we feel good when we eat that way?
Right.
Then, well, that's kind of important, and as long as you're not contributing to chronic disease, then I think, you know, whatever paradigm works for a person, we're all different. Like one of my closest friends is a naturopathic doctor in Puerto Rico, and she's vegetarian, and she eats gluten, and she eats dairy, and she eats egg, and she drinks a little bit of wine, and she feels great
uh-huh.
eating that way. It works just fine for her and her family, and I lived there with them for 6 months, and I ate those things, but their portions were just completely different from anything that I had ever experienced in my life. So it's one or two glasses of wine, and it's a small piece of lasagna and a big salad.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so it's just they're doing vegetarian differently from how I would have in the past done vegetarian, which is a huge piece of vegetarian lasagna.
Right. Well, right. Well, it's
because it's delicious.
Hearing people from other countries look at our food when they're like, well, no wonder you guys have a problem with various things. We would never eat this way. We would eat this food, but we would not
right.
eat this way. And we don't understand or, oh my gosh, look at our culture. Portion control is not something that we're,
yeah.
you know, encouraged to do. It's that we deserve that. It's whatever
right.
the case might be. Or, yeah, or supersize. Well, geez, 29 cents gets me all this food. But
more French fries.
Right. But if we had the little inflammation meter coming out of our head, we'd be like, whoa, wait a minute. That 29 cents probably isn't worth it.
Yeah. Not a good plan.
Not a good idea.
No, but it was really different. So, and that was eye-opening for me because I was fresh out of medical school. And I mean, the people I was living with were not, they were living a very much, you know, an American diet or an American type diet. It wasn't a native Puerto Rican diet, but it was, I came fresh out of school with gluten being demonized and dairy being demonized, and just it's an experience of growth for me to see that I actually ate some pizza, but I would have one piece of pizza with a salad or two pieces of pizza, instead of growing up when we would get three pizzas for a 5-person family and polish it all off in one sitting, and that was dinner. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Where it was just more reasonable. And I will say, I often felt like I wanted another piece of lasagna after I was done, but I was living at someone else's house, so I didn't, you know? And I felt good. My body healed some while I was there. So even though I'm sensitive to gluten, I was eating small amounts of gluten and I was okay there. My stress load was quite low.
Wow.
So,
sounds lovely.
Puerto Rican healing, adrenal healing, I highly recommend it. 6 months, Puerto Rico.
Let's go to Puerto Rico. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Have somebody else in control of your food. And
exactly.
That can help sometimes, too. That's for sure.
Yep.
All right. So we are running out of time. So let's end there for today.
You're so good for noticing that. That I just kept waxing on and on.
Well, thank you. This is a really nice beginning to
my pleasure.
To an ask the doctor kind of thing. We should do more of these. I think this is fun and encourage
I would love
people
to
send their questions in. Folks need to do that. That would be very nice.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Judy. My pleasure.
I hope you found some really great nuggets in there today. Food is always interesting, and that's definitely what we focused on a lot of today. So to reach Jocelyn, there are a few things you can do to reach her Lake Superior Natural Medicine Clinic. You would go to lakesuperiornaturalmedicine.com. And again, that's at 732 East Superior Street in Duluth, Minnesota. You can reach her by phone at 218-269-3212. Again, that's 218-269-3212. She has the store at the same location as her practice, and you can reach them via the web at strandsupplements.com. You can also call at 218-491-0525. Again, that's 218-491-0525. And the hours there are Monday through Saturday, 10:30 to 6:30. They are closed on Sundays. Thank you again, Jessica, for contributing your question. If you would like to contribute a question, go ahead and send that on to me. You can send it through Facebook Messenger, through email, on the website. You can reach me at judy@wellnessren.com. That's wellness, ren.com. You can definitely find emails to connect with me on the websites, and certainly out and about at events, etc. I'm happy to take a note or connect with me there. The new thing I've got going on that I mentioned earlier, occasionally I have been asked how a person who listens or has been part of the podcast can support the podcast. First of all, thank you for asking. As many of you may or may not know, I know that I certainly talk to people who the whole podcast thing is kind of a mystery and how it all works. So I am an independent person, in meaning that I'm not paid or employed by the government to put out a podcast. I'm not paid by a corporation or a local hospital or whatever the case is. It is something that I am doing out of a passion and the desire to ideally make the world a better place for us with our health and wellness, but to help people find, again, those pieces that maybe can allow them to do their health a little differently or grab on to nuggets, or maybe it's a huge change. But it's coming from me independently. And the advantage to that for you, the listener, is that I'm not told by anybody who to talk to, what to say, all of that stuff. I have been asked also a few times, you know, why I'm not employed by an agency or a hospital. And part of that would be that I wouldn't be doing the same content at all that I'm doing. I wouldn't have the freedom. I would, you know, it would be a very different show, most likely with somebody controlling the questions that I asked or the things that we could say or not say. And that's what I want to do. That's what I want to put forth in the world, is having that freedom of speech and discussion and ideas and experiences that come to you as open and freely as at all possible. I so very much look forward to doing this as long as I can, and to create a sustainable program and life, etc. So the exciting thing is that I have a Patreon account. And if you're new to Patreon, it is a platform designed for people who create to keep creating. It's an opportunity for people who want to support whatever that person is doing by giving a small monthly pledge. It can be as small as a dollar a month that goes to support the podcast so that I can keep creating. Not something you have to do. This is not something that you're required to do to keep listening at all. This is just one of those things that it's an opportunity to support the work if you feel called. If you find the information that I'm putting out there useful and helpful to you, or if you have the ability to. This is super new to me, and so it is literally, pretty literally, just put up there. And it is something that, if you're familiar with Patreon, you know that there's some different things you get at different levels and some behind the scenes things and all that fun stuff. And that's something that will be added as time goes on. So we're looking to add some fun things, but haven't got them there yet. You can check it out at patreon.com/wellnessren. That's Patreon, which is spelled patreon.com/wellnessren. You'll also find it on the regular podcast webpage, thewellnessrenpodcast.com. You'll see it on the left. It is a big red button. It says Become a Patron right on it. You'll see it below the Subscribe to iTunes button and right above where you sign up for the email reminders. Thank you, thank you, thank you for those of you who have asked, for those of you who are considering, and for those of you who take part and support, of course, we really appreciate that. Other ways that you can support the podcast at no cost to you: Amazon. If you are an Amazon user, if you go to the website first and click through the Support the Podcast on the wellnessrenpodcast.com page, you will get into the Amazon site. Whatever you purchase during that shopping trip, a little tiny portion goes to support the podcast. Other things you can do that are really, really helpful, honestly, is to share the information, meaning sharing the podcast, whether that is on your Facebook page, or you're always welcome to forward the email if you're on our email list, or copy the link and send it off to somebody if you think they might be benefited by it. Writing a review in iTunes is absolutely wonderful. And if you do have comments, don't hesitate to connect and contribute to the Facebook page or the comment section below each of the podcasts on the website. All those things are great and wonderful, and I really, really do appreciate it. So thank you so much for listening and spending your time today and hearing about the new things we have going on. I've already mentioned the website, but I'll mention it again one more time for good measure, to find all the podcasts that we've done so far: wellnessrenpodcast.com. And that's where you can sign up for the email on the left. And of course, we're on iTunes too. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Until next time, may you find many, many pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care.